What's going on, guys? Joe and Mike, Build Assets Online. Welcome back to another Q&A live stream. High ticket dropshipping. Ask us anything you want. You guys seem to like this format last time, so we're doing it again.
Absolutely. Seems like people have more questions than
answers.
I don't know. We make videos, and people don't care about the videos. People just have specific questions, so we might as well just answer those. And yeah, go from there, you know, because I feel like we've made videos about probably every single topic involving dropshipping, but people need fresh stuff. They need fresh confirmation that there's no better way to contact suppliers. There's no better way to select products, when in reality, the same strategies we've been doing over the last 7 years, we still effectively do those. And I don't know. I wish there was some shiny thing that we could do that would have like a huge benefit, because we're in position to, if a new thing comes around, we can take advantage of it better because we already have existing stores. But in reality, it's a lot of the same formulas that have, you know, been around since the end of time. They're still working, but that's all I got to say. What's going on your end, Joe?
I don't know. Same stuff. I feel like we're starting off this stream so unenthusiastically. Probably my fault.
We got to get into the right mental state, Joe. We should have did our power poses, our breath work. It's funny. I was actually thinking before about mindset. And like, I feel like mindset is just a way of tricking your brain into committing to something.
Yeah.
Because in reality, like anything we've ever done that worked out well, we did it just because, or it succeeded just because we committed to it.
Yeah.
There's going to be days where your mindset or your motivation isn't necessarily there, but if you're committed to doing it, you're going to show up, you're going to work at it, and it's going to get done.
Yeah. I mean, I got to be honest. I feel like you have a lot more of dedication to commitment than I do. Because there's definitely been times when, like, I always want to give up on stuff. And then you say no.
Yes and no. I mean, I would say you're actually way more committed than me in terms of, like, how much time and energy you'll put into doing a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah,
like SEO.
Yeah, but that's because you kept saying, like, oh, let's not give up on it yet.
I know, but what I'm trying to say is the amount of time that you spend in the trenches doing SEO or doing a lot of things, I would never do. I'd probably just give up on it if I had to do it myself.
Yeah.
So it's kind of good. I kind of just, you know, you're like a sled dog.
Well, the point is that if you're a solopreneur and you're trying to build a dropshipping store by yourself, I see people, they commit, like they lose their commitment very, very quickly. I see it, not everyone, but some people I see it happen. And I'm surprised how quickly they lose their commitment.
Right. Anything that we haven't fully succeeded on has just been because we didn't commit to it hard enough or for long enough.
Yeah. There's always, as you go on, as you do something year after year after year, there's always so many more details that you're going to parse out that you're not going to get from consuming a YouTube video or consuming a podcast or anything. I was listening to a podcast yesterday of Authority Hacker, and it was about a guy who gets just crazy traffic from Pinterest. And he's had his website since 2005 and has been doing Pinterest since basically 2005. So, you know, if you're doing something for that long, it's hard not to be successful at it. But it's easy to try something like Pinterest and give up, and something changes and then you give up. So no matter what you're doing, I think staying committed is the key, and being in something for a long time to, you know, gives you an edge over everyone else, really.
Of course, the dilemma there is how long do you stick with something that is bullshit? Because when you're doing something, you don't know if it's bullshit or not when you start out. You have to have that kind of leap of faith. Like, we didn't know how much money we could make dropshipping when we first started. We didn't know what it would blossom into. We just had to decide that we were going to commit to it, to see it through to a minimum level of profitability. You have to go through the process just to see if it works, at the very, very least. And that's with anything. And then you can decide if it's, as Ryan Daniel Moran would say, a golden turd. You can polish it all you want. You can do whatever, but at the end of the day, it's still a turd. So we'll get to the questions in a second. We got Kenneth says yo. Justin says yo. Game control doesn't show up well on StreamYard when you send all these obscure emojis. Kevin said good day. Sean the Don, what's up? Game control, what point did you hire your first VA, and what task would they do?
I would say it depends on how much money you. So there's a dilemma here. If you have more time than money, I feel like you probably shouldn't hire a VA until you kind of make your first sales and you have a good feel of how everything is running. And that's because it's good to get a feel for every step in the business. However, if you have a full-time job and maybe you don't have enough time, you should definitely leverage a VA just because you don't have the time to upload every product and do all that stuff. But yeah, I think it depends on how much time and how much money you have.
Yeah, if you watch that interview with Raz, he never hired a VA for like the first maybe year or two of his business. He was doing every single thing himself. And to me, there's something to that, because you have an extremely what's the word, Joe? You're extremely in tune with everything going on your store. You know all the products. You know the pulse of who's calling in, why they're calling in, and you can be more committed to the business. Because another thing that I feel like makes people go down a bad path is they overly outsource too quickly. And what happens is it creates this level of you give a VA a task, and you're giving tasks out like crazy. These people are doing these tasks, but you yourself aren't in tune enough to know whether they did a good job, or if they did a so-so job, or if they did a bad job. And that has, like we say, that could be death by a thousand paper cuts. Your VA uploads products in a way that's kind of bad. They're missing some things. Maybe they didn't put the spec sheets on and you didn't notice it. And then you got a VA answering the phones, and maybe they're not so good on the phones, and they're not answering the right questions. And now this can make your store deteriorate, especially in the beginning, when you want to be securing as many sales as possible. And that could be a hindrance to, getting to that first stage of growth, that 10,000 a month, that 20,000 a month mark.
I think you got to be very, very careful in the beginning. Obviously, a lot of people talk about, working in the business versus working on the business, and you should be working on the business. But if you don't know what to work on, you got to work in the business to find out what you should be working on, basically.
Right. So to quickly summarize, you should do everything yourself first to a certain degree, including uploading products. And once you know, say you're uploading a brand of products, do that yourself. Make sure you create basically a template for that brand. So when you upload them, it's on point, and then you can give that exact format to a VA. So like product uploads would be probably the first thing you could outsource. But only do that once you are really good at uploading products for particular brands. Like anytime there's a new brand, I'll want to upload it myself, or I'll be very, very involved in analyzing how the product's uploaded, how it looks on the page, and making sure that I fully approve of it, versus just giving it to a VA and letting them upload it and not doing anything from there. Yeah, and then when it comes to like having them do phones or do customer service, I would say just outsource this once you're sick of it, you don't have the time. Fernando says, "What's up, Mike and Joe? What's up, Fernando?" Game Control says, "You need some emojis in your life."
Yeah, it
I
doesn't
got
work
plenty of
though.
emojis in my life.
That's what
It
comes.
works on YouTube, Joe, if you're looking at it.
Oh, no, check it out.
Yeah, he sent a whole bunch of. I don't even know what these are. These are like special YouTube emojis.
Oh, wow, look at those. That's
Anyway.
nice.
Hey, Mario Garcia. Hello. What do you guys think of a website that sells kitchen islands, kitchen carts, bar cabinets, and bar carts? I have done my research on these products and meet all criteria. What criteria do they meet, Mario? Because these products you can certainly sell, there's nothing wrong with them. But if they meet all the criteria, why do you ask what we think? Because what I think is these are all good, but I think they are not diverse enough. These are basically all the same things. It's all just a bulky piece of furniture. If I was going down that route, I would diversify my product selection a little bit more.
And I think it's going to depend on how you execute it. I have a call with a student after this. She selling certain products, but from my analysis, not executing it very well. What you want to have happen is that when you have someone come to your website, say they're searching for a, let's just say a bar cabinet, that's what they want. And so if your website is not designed in a way where they might click a product, but that clot from Google Shopping, just because people just randomly click whatever from what they search, that might not be exactly what they're looking for. And if your website isn't tuned up enough to get them to shop around and contact you and basically have them find what they need in that one place by using your navigation, by searching your site, maybe they could filter for some sizes, things like that, then you're not going to be able to maximize your presence in that product category. If you go on Wayfair.com, for example, what you see, and I feel like Wayfair is kind of a good example and a bad example. It's a bad example because I mean, they sell so much stuff. But it's a good example because they've actually done the best they can to make it friendly for the user to navigate through all that stuff. So if you click furniture on their thing, you click office furniture, like it has another menu. You click furniture, you can then click office furniture, you can then click desks, you can click chairs, you can click bookcases, and then say you click desks, you get to a place where then you can filter what kind of desk you need by the size, by the price, by the color, by the shape, etc. And by the type: gaming desk, standing desk, executive desk, desk with chair set. So this is what you need to keep in mind, is that you don't want to be as complicated as Wayfair because that takes a lot to manage. But if you are selling something, you need to be the authority on it and kind of like, the customer does not need to leave your website to find before like to find what they're looking for.
Well, so Joe, when you said fine tuning, what do you mean in regards to fine tuning?
I guess what I'm saying is that say you have a website that sells these kitchen islands, kitchen carts, bar cabinet, and bar cart. The way your website should be set up is that if you just have one brand of kitchen island and like two sizes, two, three products of kitchen carts, and like, just a couple different sizes. In my opinion, that's not enough. Yeah, you might make a few sales here or there, but Mike, if you look at our websites, if you consider the website we have now, or even the website that we sold for 650K, the last sale that we did. Even though the website name had nothing to do with our best-selling product, we had mega menus built out that helped the user find the exact sizing and the exact specs of our best-selling product. So our website was finely tuned to sell that best-selling product, even though it had nothing to do with the domain name, if you remember.
So to kind of summarize for Mario here,
And we had all
my
different
advice.
sizes. And we had basically anything that whatever people like, there's nothing that they couldn't find if they were looking for that specific product that was one of our best sellers.
I mean, so kind of my advice on it was, I think to sell all these four things together, you can do better in terms of your product selection. Like, I'd rather you have kitchen islands, kitchen carts, and then other kitchen related stuff. So like a range hood, which is like more appliancey, a bit, just a different type of thing. And then maybe, I don't know what other type of kitchen things are available off the top of my head. But Joe is also saying, when you go after these brands, if you just have one kitchen island that's just one type of spec, it's just one size, and then you have a bar cabinet that's just one size, it's going to be not ideal. Or at least you want, if you're selling kitchen islands, for example, you want to make your store look as big and authoritative as possible. So with when it, like when you do mega menus, have separate menus for each size. Just build it out to give the customer the best experience possible. Don't just have your navigation be kitchen islands, kitchen carts, bar cabinets, bar carts. And that's actually what like the old advice used to be back in the day, drop shipping. Like, I mean, we used to do that even back in the day too. Like, just like the navigation would be so bad. And I think it hinders customers to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, we're always not so much now, but I feel like back in the day, we were always thinking about someone is landing on this site. And it's not like we were looking at any like complicated heat maps or anything like this, but we would just think about it. Like, if someone's landing on this page, what do they need to see? And we're tweaking the menus, I mean, somewhat regularly, where we used to quite a lot.
Yeah, honestly, this makes me think that we should go back and audit our menus now. And I think it's probably an even better job we could be doing. Yeah,
Yeah.
because I found it to be really important, just the level of experience you give a customer in terms of like how easy it is for them to narrow in and find what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Because
Because
even if you have three different Kitchen Island brands and that you have few hundred products within that, you can't just have a navigation that's kitchen islands and it just takes you to a page with all kitchen islands. Customers are going to leave.
yeah. And if you, I mean, when I look at like our sales in Shopify now, like I'll look at where the customer first hit, like the first landing page they hit. And I would say at least 50% of the time, just based on when I look at it, I feel like they often land on a product that is not the product that they end up buying. And that's just a result of what we're talking about now. Having lots of selection.
Or actually, what I found, Joe, too, is when you have your product and it has like the variants are really well done, that also makes a big difference because customers like to be able to play around and change the size or change these colors. And I personally feel like when we have products that have really well done variants, we're using bold product options to add on other stuff and just make it a more complete experience that customers seem to stay on the page longer. They seem to respond better to those products. But also in turn, when somebody's clicking over from Google Shopping, they land on your page and now they're looking at the different variants. They're spending more time on the page. They're clicking around, they're scrolling. That shows Google people are interacting with the page in a positive way. They're not just bouncing and exiting your website. And therefore, Google rewards you for that. You get cheaper clicks, you get shown more. So it creates a bit of a upward spiral in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So yeah, guys, leave your questions. We will get to them, but yeah, just comment them so we have a backlog and leave a thumbs up so people get notified that we're live. So Kevin Holmes says, in a more complex technical niche, how can I curb overanalysis and create adequate, good quality product pages without overcomplicating things and wasting time? It's actually what we were just talking about. In a more technical slash complex niche, how can I curb overanalysis? I'm trying to think about where you would be overanalyzing, regardless of it, if the niche is more technical and complex. I would say, if you can comment and shed some more light on the situation, like it would be easier for us to answer. My thoughts, Joe, when he says overanalysis, I feel like he has a bunch of products and they have like a bunch of complicated variants, and he's not sure how to make the product pages or what exactly he should do. Is that what you think?
Well, you need to analyze how you're going to do each product page if it is complicated, because that might take some thinking. Like, for example, we used to sell like these art prints. Like we had a website that had like 5,000, a brand that had like 5,000 different art prints, and they weren't super high ticket. They were like 200, 300 bucks each. But those product pages didn't need a lot of analyzing because there was really nothing to the products. But if you have products that are more complicated, you need to sit down and figure out how to communicate that. And if you have a lot of products, like Mike was guessing, you could just kind of do it one product at a time. Like, there's really no other way to do it. Obviously, you would want to start with your best margin stuff as a starting point. You're not going to spend a lot of time doing this for something you can make $20 on.
My suspicion is he probably has, like, when a supplier gives you a product sheet sometimes, it'll be the same sort of product, but it'll be a bunch of different versions. It's, like, if it's complex, like, one will have this with it, one will have that with it. So I guess I feel like he's trying to ask, how do you display that on your website properly?
Well,
Because you're right, with like with the art prints, yeah, it's just one thing. It is what it is. You just throw it up. But I feel like this is what we were just kind of talking about, right? Like, if you have like a kitchen island, and the supplier sends you the kitchen island sheet, and it's like there's say X amount of sizes, there's X amount of countertop finishes, you have the cabinet fixtures, you have all these different things. Not that the kitchen island is a very complex product. But yeah, the question is, how do you present that to the customer in an optimal way on your product page? And I would say, like on Shopify, how many variants can you add? I forget what it is, like three, maybe four,
well,
like
yeah.
size, material, what's another one?
Yeah, I don't know, but it just comes down to putting yourself in the customer's shoes. Like, if someone lands on this page, what do they need to know to make the purchase? And if you're thinking about that, then you should be fine.
So, something we like to use is bold product options, because you're able to take a bunch of variants and take products that are particularly complex and do things like add a checkbox or just create variants in a more sophisticated way, so that you can display a lot of options and a lot of complexity, but make it look simple. So, yeah, I'm not sure if you're in our group, Kevin, but this is something we do help out extensively with inside of our coaching program. So, yeah, I hope that makes sense. You can comment on some more insight regarding this issue, and we can answer the question again. Sayed asks, do you suggest to have Google My Business for our dropshipping store? How about targeting location-based keywords? Google My Business for dropshipping store. Joe may have a different answer to this. I would say, in the beginning, I wouldn't recommend it, because what you don't want is to have a Google My Business, and then someone just comes and leaves you like a 1-star review, and now you have like 2 reviews, and one's 5-star, one's 1-star. You have a 2.5-star rating. That makes you look bad. So I would say not to do it in the beginning.
Yeah, I would do it later when you feel that you can have a good customer list that have a good positive experience, and you can reach out to get those positive reviews. 'Cause yeah, you don't want to have a 1-star Google My Business.
It's funny, I did a call with a guy in the UK the other week, and he ran into like payment processor issues. He was doing a whole bunch of stuff. He's not one of our students, but I was doing a call with him, and he had the worst Google My Business I've ever seen on a drop shipping store. He might have had less than 2 stars, and yet people were still going onto his website and buying. It's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, even what we had, we've made videos about this, but we had a supplier that was like basically scamming people and scamming us, in that they would never, like, something would break, they wouldn't fix it. We'd pay them to ship an item out, they wouldn't ship it. Their Google My Business was also just like absolutely atrocious, like 1 star and a lot of ratings. But people would still buy from this brand. Even like on Home Depot, the products would be on there. They'd all have 1-star reviews. People were still buying this product. I don't understand what it takes to convince a customer not to shop and buy that product.
Well, certainly
And then
it turns off some people.
certainly, yeah. But I guess, yeah, there's just a percentage of people that don't pay attention to anything. They don't know where they are. People call us, they think we're Walmart, stuff like that. So there's always that end of the bell curve. How about targeting location-based keywords? So would that be something like bar cart, Miami, Florida?
Yeah, we haven't tried this too much specifically. It could be good to do. I would be interested in trying it. I just feel like, I don't know. I would feel like if I was to do it, I would want to do it on like a big scale, like with programmatic SEO, but I don't know if afraid is the right word, but I don't want to like throw so much at our main drop shipping store. Like I would want to do basically every zip code or something if I were to do this, and I'm like afraid to do it. But
I'm
maybe.
not too worried about this, because you're going to show up in Google Shopping for people that are searching for that type of thing. You could do text ads for like bar cart, Miami, Florida, but I don't see the necessity in it. The shopping ad should already cover stuff like that. Like, you can potentially show up for bar cart, Miami.
I mean, I feel like you could see, I mean, perhaps if you see, maybe this is something we could think about, is if you see data inside Google Shopping, say where people are searching by bar cart NYC, and we're getting a lot of clicks for that, maybe it's worth making a page like where to buy a bar cart in NYC or something. It could be, I mean, could be something. Could be something.
Yeah, this requires, I think, like Joe said, a programmatic approach to like being able to target all the major cities at the very least, if you want like some sort of good return out of it. So we don't do this. Our students don't do this. I wouldn't recommend it. So don't worry about this stuff. Hassan said, "What should we have to say when supplier asks for physical presence because they don't want to work with online retailer?"
So you
You
have
could
two
answer this one.
options here. There's two ways to get around this objection. One way is that if you're already well established in the industry, you could say, look, we don't have a physical presence, but we're selling your competitors' brands. And people are asking about your brand. And right now we're recommending and selling your competitors because we can't offer you. So if you don't want to carry us because of no physical look presence, then it's kind of your loss and the ball's in your court. Second way you can get around this is you can look for like a small warehouse space, like a private warehouse in your area, and say, we have a small warehouse space, blah, 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 blah. So I like the first way better.
Well, Joe, I feel like in my experience, when I talk to suppliers, they say, oh, you know, do you want to bring in the products, whatever, whatever. And like, I kind of approach the question like, yeah, we could take stock in. We don't typically do it, but, you know, we'll take it in for returns and stuff like that. And to kind of allude that you have a physical location, not necessarily like a showroom, but you have a physical location where you can take stuff in. So being a brick and mortar is much different than having a physical location. And a physical location, even if you have like a UPS box or whatever, anything that looks like a real address, the likelihood that a supplier is going to like check up on that is pretty low. So when they say, do you have a physical location? Just say yes. And then you put in that address. And just because you have a physical location doesn't mean they're going to require you to use it with them. Do you agree with that or disagree?
No, I agree with that. Again, I think there's many ways to get around the objection. I think between what we both said, they've all been covered.
Yeah. Business. Where do you think Google Ads is heading with the new updates? Hi. Well, I don't know what exact updates you're talking about, but Google is kind of gearing more and more towards using AI and using like algorithm-based stuff for their ads, like for their ads platform. And I mean, that's just the way it's going to be, considering you have Facebook, you have basically every other social media that's relying on that type of thing. I think the fact remains, though, that Google will have to always have a manual search query based side of their platform, because Google is the place where people go and they put in queries. So I don't think they'll ever do away with not being like, if I want to show up for when someone searches Kitchen Island, I should have the right to go and show up for that precise thing.
I don't know. Is he talking about specific ads updates in relation to Google Ads specific updates, or how the Google search engine is going to be different with the search generative experience or whatever it is when they have like a AI built into their search engine, like Bing? Is that what you're talking about? I don't know. Or is he talking about like updates to the Google Ads platform?
Yeah, I don't know. To me, it's the same thing though, right? If somebody searches a query and the response isn't necessarily a search result, it's a AI response, there is still going to be some pay to play situation for what the AI says. It's still going to show products, in my opinion, and it should still show paid results. So,
yeah, I'm not too worried about it either way. I think having a business model where you have paid ads is going to give you always the best chance of success, even if search engines become completely AI based. On the flip side of that, I'm kind of like skeptical how far Google is going to move to change their search engine to make it completely AI based, because I feel like there was like so much hype about it in the beginning, but I get the feeling that like regular people, like they don't really care about this. They don't care about having an AI search assistant when they look for something. And I feel like it would be, you know, I would imagine any boomer, which is like the core bulk of the population, anytime they're searching for something and there's this AI assistant that comes up, I feel like it's just going to confuse them.
Yeah.
And Google, have to be very careful. Like that's how they make their money, is people, they have like a cash cow. Like I think they're going to be more cautious to change things than we might have thought originally.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about it. I mean, if you actually survey the amount of people that know what ChatGPT is, or beyond that, use ChatGPT, in our world, it looks bigger than it actually is. Like we see all the people that are actually using it. You go out into the real world, probably less than 1% of the population actually knows how to talk to an
Yeah.
AI bot.
It's marketers, tech people, and students. That's probably about it.
Yeah. In the beginning, when like new technology comes out, I mean, it was like think about when like the website came out. Not that I was really alive for that, but we had no idea the way that it would be used. People just thought it'd be like, oh, online brochures, because that was like the only way they could conceptualize what a website was. But now, as you see, the internet is the internet, and it kind of goes in its own direction based off of the way things actually get used. So, hope that made sense.
Yeah.
Game control, the best tips for interlinking? Question.
Well, if you're interlinking for SEO purposes, which is, I'm assuming that's why you're asking the question, you just got to think about where you're driving the link, like what page do you want to rank and what do you want it to rank for? So if you have a collection page, say it was, I don't know, bar carts for sale. You would basically want to have a series of pages, related pages that you link to that collection page. And then it gives you the option to build links to all of them. So, I mean, I feel like the only other reason for interlinking is if you're trying to give customers more options in terms of like, oh, if you're landing on this bar cart, you might like that one, but I feel like your related products can take care of that. So I don't know. Other than for SEO purposes, and knowing what pages that you want to increase their rankings, that's when you would use interlinking. And it's pretty straightforward.
Let's try to go a little bit faster through these questions because I think by the time we get to just these current questions, we'll be at the end of the time here. But anyway, Litmo Health. Do you think that it's a good idea to start a store in a broad niche as a beginner and then later eventually change it to a more narrowed or open another store in a narrowed niche with experience? And so she said a few more things here. I want to maximize my chances of success with the first store to at least a few thousand a month profit. I struggle to choose a narrow niche. It is saturated or seasonable or low number of suppliers. I don't believe that. I found a B2B niche where at first look there is plenty of suppliers, but after closer analysis, it seems that most of them have no or almost no brand search demand. Another issue. They don't have as well an offer for dealers on their website. Very rare, like just a few percent. Do you think it is a good niche to choose for a beginner, especially non-native English? I'm afraid that it'll be much harder to succeed when starting. Probably I will have to convince a lot of them to drop ship, which might be hard for me, but it might be an opportunity as well. So to summarize all this, your main question is broad niche or narrow niche? And your concern is if you do something too narrow, it will fail for all those reasons you said. You don't want a broad store. You don't want a narrow store. It's got to be the Goldilocks method, right in the middle. Because when people are too broad, the fail rate is much higher because they just skim off the top. They just get a whole bunch of random high competition suppliers that don't make sense together on a website. So you have no authority. You have a bunch of random suppliers that aren't, they're going to be harder to sell. And you never actually find those cream of the crop suppliers that will take you to that next level. So you talk about seasonality, you talk about is a niche saturated, a low number of suppliers. If you're doing things in a way, like we'll go back to this example here. Like this guy Mario wants to have four types of products on his website. This to me, these four sets of products. I personally wouldn't do this, but this is a good example of stuff that's potentially that's closely related enough that your store isn't too broad, but it's not too narrow. Because there's going to be different suppliers for kitchen islands, going to be different suppliers for bar cabinets, different suppliers for bar carts. So this is tightly focused to a certain degree, and but it gives you enough room to where if bar carts don't work out, you can sell the kitchen islands. Or maybe you like selling the kitchen islands more, and you can decide to build out the store, get range hoods, get other kitchen stuff, get kitchen cabinets, whatever, onto your website. So you'll never run into this issue of seasonality, of something being too saturated, of there not being enough suppliers, all these common, not excuses, but things people get in their head about when it comes to dropshipping. So,
you know, I think that you should also, the best way you're going to approach this is if you think of it with the customer avatar in mind to an extent. Yes. And I think the reason why the bar carts and all that kind of thing grouped together on a site is kind of a bad example is because it's so much different. Like there's no, think of it compared to the office products thing we did a few weeks ago. We came up with products for a hypothetical store that was targeting an office, like an office workspace. And it's narrow, but it's broad at the same time. And I feel like that's the way people should be thinking. Like people all like time and time again, oh, I want to sell pizza ovens and I want to sell kitchen islands and I want to sell range hoods. Like there's no congruency to anything that they're doing. And we talk about it time and time again. There has to be some sort of congruency. You know, if I was going to sell a pizza oven, one of the most common things that people pick, I would be doing it in a way where my store is geared out towards like pizzerias. So I would be asking GPT, what expensive equipment does a pizzeria need? And I'm going to come up with things like dough proofers, ventilation system. You got your range hoods. You got your refrigerators. You got, of course, your pizza ovens. Many, many, many different types of pizza ovens. Some pizzerias have the wood burning. Some have the whatever. Like, I don't know. I don't know much about this, but you can find that there's tons and tons of types of pizza ovens out there. And
well, Joe, I mean, I would even take it a step further. And if you have something that's within that type of like if you're in the cooking niche, or you could even stay specifically in the pizza type niche, right? You could, part of your website would serve B2B, and that you could have commercial pizza ovens. You could also have home pizza ovens.
Exactly.
And even like you said, like all those things, that way you're covering every single base of, you'll have suppliers that are more B2B. You'll have suppliers that are more B2C. You could have some things on your website that are seasonal. You'll have things that are not seasonal. You'll have things that are oppositely seasonal. So some things are more popular during the winter, some things are more popular during the summer. So this is how you build out a store that's immune to all these things that people get worried about and lead to failure.
What do you think of that niche, Mike, that I just came up with?
It's all right. It's got potential.
I feel like it's never been discussed before in that way.
Maybe not. It's the first time ever.
I'm the first one in the universe.
Giuseppe. Business. You think IPTV is a good business model for cash flow that can be invested later in dropshipping? What the fuck is IPTV?
I have no idea what that is.
You don't need to invest in dropshipping. It's the whole point. If you don't have enough money to do dropshipping, you don't have a few thousand dollars in your bank of expendable income that you can use to start up a store and have money to start running ads in the beginning. Hopefully your ads are profitable within the first week, 2 weeks, and you're just rolling from there. But the whole point of dropshipping is it takes an extremely low amount of money compared to any business model that can get you high ticket sales. And also at, you know, after a year of consistent profit, you have a business that you could sell for 20 to 40 times its monthly profit. So I don't know what IPTV is. I don't know if it's a good business model for cash flow, But you don't need to do it. If you don't have enough money to do drop shipping, then drive Ubers, do Instacart. I don't know. Do something that's going to actually guarantee you money versus trying to do another business venture in order to potentially make money that you're going to use to do another business model and potentially make money. Get a job.
Yeah.
Preston said, "Hey, Mike, when I make changes to my product feed, should I make changes to the feed with some process first? I deleted some things in GMC first today." Is this the same thing? Did he rephrase it? I don't know. I'll just enter this first. You shouldn't need to make changes to your SIM process or your GMC directly. The only time you should need to update SIM process is if you want to add Google product categories, you want to change like the age range of the product, like all ages or adult or the gender, you want to put it as unisex, the item condition, put it as new, stuff like that. But everything you do on Shopify should then be scraped by SIM process, which then feeds into Google Merchant Center. So I'm not sure what changes you're trying to make to your product feed to do this and why you're tinkering around in Google Merchant Center, what you're trying to achieve there. We said, when I want to make changes to my SIM process feed, should I make the changes to SIM process first and then wait and then let that reflect in Google Merchant Center? Yes, because that's the whole point of SIM process. That's what you're paying them to do, is to they're creating the feed for you that's based off of your Shopify and then feeding that to Google Merchant Center. So you don't have to do any of that stuff manually. Yafet says, thinking of adding more categories, but they'd be 3 to 7 products. Is it better to add more products to add more products to the category or just make them part of existing categories and just add it to the sidebar? I think this is kind of going off of what we said earlier. You just got to think about it common sense wise a little bit. Like if it's a totally separate product or a totally separate product category, then it might need its own spot in the navigation. Like, and there's many ways to do it, but it just has to make common sense for a customer. Like if they're looking for a kitchen island, they should have to go under bar carts to find the kitchen island section.
Yeah, just make it as easy as possible for the customer to find what they're looking for in many different ways. So whether they're searching it, whether they're clicking the navigation, whether they're clicking the collections, it should be very, very easy for the customer to find what they're looking for.
Right. So you could have a navigation that's like serving carts, and then that breaks down into bar carts, it breaks down into kitchen carts. Something, yeah, just make it easy. Eleven Beast 11. Joe, good question here. What niche do you prefer is suitable for Facebook and Pinterest ads?
None really. I would not rely on Facebook or Pinterest. I have no interest in Facebook and Pinterest ads when it comes to this business model. I know, listen, some people there's certain things that it works for, but what we want to do here is we want to target high intent buying search terms on Google, on Bing sometimes, other search engines, because we know people are searching for stuff that they want to buy. And it's much easier of a sale than trying to sell someone from Pinterest or Facebook because they are not necessarily in the shopping mode at that point.
The whole reason that we're doing this method of drop shipping is that we don't have to use Facebook and Pinterest ads because it's going to be so hard to succeed as a beginner doing those things. There's not enough intent. Sean Dingley, what theme do you recommend for high ticket in 2023? Still Empire. Also, do you hire someone to build your store or do you design it with things like Pagefly?
We have done a few pages with Pagefly, but it's kind of more of a niche circumstance. You don't have to do all of your pages with Pagefly or even anywhere close to that. Yes, we still recommend Empire. And if you haven't made any money doing this or anything online, then you should be building your store, period. You should not be hiring someone to do it. You have to practice the moves in order to get good at them before you tell someone else how to do them.
Yeah, exactly. If you're not in there messing with the theme yourself, and it's not very code intensive, it's not super difficult, but if you're not in there messing with it, you're not going to know the ins and outs of it, what could be edited, what could be tweaked. And so if you pay someone to go do it, you're not going to have a good idea of what's a good job or not. So
You know, a
you
big
gotta get
part of,
there.
I think, having success online is just like staring at the same things over and over again. Like, you know how many times I've looked at our website and like looked at competitors' websites and pulled them up again and again and again? And I'm sure, my, how much time have you spent looking at Google Ads? Just pulling up the same screen again and again and again. And then maybe you notice something a little bit
Yeah.
different. This, you know, next time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think back to when we made that first drop shipping website that was selling dog toys. And we basically just ran Facebook traffic to the homepage and we were like, why doesn't this work? That's kind of the same thing. It's like you see people executing well, but you don't know how to properly perceive it in your brain. You know what I mean? Like when you get an ad on Instagram or you get something from Russell Brunson for ClickFunnels, they're doing things at a very high level. And you could literally look at that page, and a person who's an expert marketer might see all the little different things on the page and say, wow, that's really smart. He did this. It's really smart. He did that. I'm going to copy this. Versus somebody who's just purely a customer, they're just new to all this. They're seeing totally different things. They're being captivated by this. They're being captivated by that. They're totally sucked into it. So yeah, your perception changes after years and years and years doing this. You start to see different things. You start to, again, yeah, you form that expert knowledge. Like you see something, you're looking at a ClickFunnels ad, you're looking at a ClickFunnels sales page. You think, oh, actually, I know how to do this on Empire Theme now because I was just there and I saw it had this button to do this. And now you can go and mess around with your add to cart button and, do something like that. But if you're not on the ground level getting that experience, that won't happen.
Yeah, it's just about getting, I feel like it's about getting the reps in.
Yeah.
As many reps as possible. And a lot of people want to skip that part. Like, I was watching, I mean, not watching. I was at jiu-jitsu yesterday, and there was where the we had like an instructor that, like, he's a wrestler. So we were doing wrestling stuff, like wrestling drills. And I'm terrible at wrestling. And we were practicing like the snap down or whatever. And the instructor's like, yeah, like he was, that was like an extra person. And so he was going with me. And he's like, yeah, I don't really need to practice this because I've done it 10 million times. Like, I'm sure he's drilled it 10 million times in middle school, 10 million times in high school. And maybe I've done a snap down like 100 times. I don't know. But the point is like, once you put the reps in, then you could tell someone how to do it. Then you can outsource it. Like, there would be no
Yeah.
need for me to build a Shopify store anymore because I know how I want it to be done. And I could tell someone exactly how to do it. But you got to put the reps in. If you don't put the reps in, then you're not going to know what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, jiu-jitsu is a really good example of this because you can see somebody do an armbar 1,000 times. You could do an armbar 100 times. But then after 200, you start looking at it differently. You start noticing things. Things that you'll never notice the first time you try to armbar, the fifth time you try to do it. It's like the more and more experience you get, the more of these little details you see. And that's really what becoming an expert is. Kenneth, is there other options other than virtual addresses for non-US residents? Google doesn't like virtual addresses.
So, I this is a tough one. Now, I know you're having some trouble with your Google Ads account. You don't necessarily need a virtual address to get approved. I feel like I don't know exactly why you're having these issues, but you don't need an address to get approved. But if you did want to get, if I wanted to get an address and I was a non-US resident, I would probably, this would take some time and some finagling, but like maybe going on Craigslist and looking around different cities and whatever, perhaps asking a local business owner for to use their, maybe you'd like wire them like $100 or something. It's kind of,
I mean, that is common on Craigslist, right?
it's pretty
People
common,
say
yeah.
that. Yeah, what does it look like? Like you go into Craigslist and then you go into.
It's been a long time since I looked at this, so I don't really know, but people
But
will
it is
like,
common for people to like say, "Hey, you can rent my mailbox,
People will
or
you
I have
people
this
will
amount
like
here."
verify like Google postcards on Craigslist and things like that. So I'm not sure the exact steps of doing it, but I know it is done.
Oh, Sean, we had some more follow-up to his theme building question. Do you build out custom descriptions for each product you have, or do you use what the supplier gives you? This is where I'm having trouble. I use the app Tabs Pro. Some descriptions look great, some look awful. No, we don't typically build out custom descriptions in the beginning because it'd be too much effort for a bunch of products that we're not sure if they work yet, or not. But at the same time, I don't know. Do you know what this is, Joe? The apps tabs?
No, I don't know what he's talking about.
At the app tabs pro, you don't necessarily need to tabulate things on your product pages in the beginning. Just have a basic, like one dimensional description and just do it like that. I don't know. Yeah, it seems like you're overcomplicating it a little bit. Carpet Muncher, do you guys have a list you use to add to your negative keyword list when just starting, or do you add as you go? I don't have a list of 1,000 terms to add to my negative keyword list or anything like that. Yeah, I mean, you can do the basic use, secondhand, repair, manual, all those things you can think of at the top of your head. From there, just add as you go. It's really not going to be something that like destroys your budget. You just, if you see the term show up and it's a garbage term, then just add it right then and there. I'd rather just pick it off as I'm going into the account every day or every other day in the beginning. And yeah, just do it like that. Because again, actually, this is a good point. It goes back to everything that we were saying. People want to use these huge negative keyword lists, and I've seen this happen where they just add in like literally thousands of terms that they didn't even look through and see if maybe, in fact, one of those terms is could be potentially relevant. Or if they do it wrong, it could be screwing up their eligibility for a bunch of keywords because they have this one random negative keyword in that they took for some list that wasn't relevant. So that's what I have to say. Just do it yourself. Toby W, what's your opinion on getting lots of suppliers 50 plus running your ads so they only bid super low on generic and mainly bid on branded? Low impression share, bid is low, spread over lots of brands. I think this is going to become too much to manage. Because what's going to happen is if you have 50 plus brands, even if you're bidding low, they're going to have to spend some money. Let's say each brand, just the entire brand itself, only spends $1 a day. That's $50 a day. But you're getting one click per brand per day. So by the end of the month, you've spent $1,500 and no brand has gotten a good amount of exposure to come to any conclusion about what works, what doesn't work. Not to mention, like the products inside the brands. So I don't like this at all, because you're going to spend too much money without actually having concrete results as to whether a brand is viable or not. Additionally, it might be like to just try and get strictly branded clicks with very small bids might not work out the way that you think that it will. If it's a good branded term, it could cost $1, $2, $3, but it's worth it to pay that if you know that's going to sell for you. So like, if I'm here, I have 5 brands, but I know what works on particular products, and I'm here bidding $3 while you're bidding 10 cents, 20 cents. How are you going to compete with me? It's not really worth it. So that's my opinion. Kenneth said, thanks guys. Game Control said, how you guys doing today? You're doing good. Taking it easy. Last question here. Eric said, partnered with a commercial company that has 10 brands. This is a good thing? Question. It can be. So what you're referring to is kind of like a distributor. They distribute multiple brands. So we've seen that be very lucrative for us in certain situations. We've seen it be less lucrative in other situations. It comes down to, is there still MAP on these 10 brands? Are your margins good? All the same stuff applies. So it's good in that you've now gotten access to 10 brands, but what is the viability of each brand? Anything to add on that, Joe?
No, that's about it. I think that's our last question here. We have one more. I guess we can answer it real quick. Have you scaled AI blog posts on a dropshipping store yet? To some extent, not huge. So when you're scaling AI blog posts, the thing is that you can do a ton of them. And on a dropshipping store, you don't have that many terms that have high commercial intent that are relevant to your store. So when you say scale, we have a blog right now where I'm posting like 2,000 posts a day. For a dropshipping store, that's not really feasible because it just becomes so irrelevant to the products, I think. And there's like not enough keywords that make it viable. So there's certain keyword sets and niches where hugely scaling is going to work well, and others where it's not. But I think Koala is a great tool for getting the necessary content done for a dropshipping store where it would otherwise be pretty expensive.
Yeah. But we do have AI content that ranks, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, there's no question about it. But
so we've scaled it to its logical limit. But yeah, we're not going to go into spam AI blog posts on our dropshipping store in an attempt to get more sales.
Yeah, because I don't think it would really work. I've kind of gone probably a bit overboard with it as it is until I realized, like, hey, this is, it's not worth doing this. I might as well just use my OpenAI credits or my VA's time or whatever in a place where I can actually make ad revenue, because a lot of these posts I'm generating have no buying intent.
Cool. All right, guys, that's about it. If you want to learn more about our coaching program, apply to see if you're a fit. We guarantee you'll be profitable with your first $1,000 of ad spend, or we'll refund you the difference. Go to buildassetsonline.com/enroll, fill out an application, see how the offer works. Check it out. It's free. No pressure. It's easy. You'll like it. You could take it or leave it. But as always, guys, take it easy.